Hi, this is Mike Grell, and I'm here with the Long Box guys, whoever the hell they are.
We're on the road, we're going home, to the place where wild nerds roam, with pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to cons is our escape. It's like Mecca for geeks in a star-filled sky, where you can meet all your heroes and none of them fly.
Hey man, this is Kevin Smith. Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box, comics talk for comics fans.
Good evening, Long Box Legion, if you're listening at night. Otherwise, good afternoon or good morning. We're here with the, I'm here with the rest of the guys. Tom's having a little internet trouble, so I get to do the intros right now, which I am terrible at. Good evening, Tom. How are you, and what are you drinking?
I'm doing great, and tonight I am drinking Red, the third best scotch you can buy for $20.
The third best scotch for $20. Is that $20 and under, or exactly $20?
Oh, exactly $20. I go in there with a fucking note. I'm playing grocery store games every time I go into a liquor store.
Yeah, $20, same as downtown.
Same as downtown. Mike, how are you doing near downtown New Orleans? What are you doing and what are you drinking?
I'm doing excellent. And tonight I am drinking Eagle Rare. It is a bourbon from Buffalo Trace.
Oh, Eagle Rare.
Yes.
All right. They have common, uncommon, rare, legendary. LT, how are you doing? What are you drinking?
No one gets that joke, Josh.
Yeah. There's a bunch of Magic the Gathering people. They do. They love it.
They were just like, oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
I understand that reference.
It's so good. I'm doing okay. I'm drinking some John Barr scotch. How are you doing, Josh?
I am doing well. I got a delivery of 10 yards of mulch today, and I threw a lot of it out there. I'm pretty tired. I am drinking a dry cider from Down East. It's pretty delicious. And speaking of delicious, worst segue ever, Steve Ditko made some pretty damn delicious covers, and I'll tell you why. We just did the goat on that, so if you want to be a Patreon supporter, go check that out and listen to it, because it's good, and Mike and I are right all the damn time. Okay, most of the time. 50% of the time. At least 33% of the time. So tonight, due to the passing of a comic book legend, we will be talking about the art and times of Steve Ditko. Now, I know Mike and I had a chance to watch the BBC documentary on Mr. Ditko. Did anybody else get a chance to see that?
I did not.
All right. So I do have a trivia question that some of you may not know, but I'll let Mike kick it off with the Ditko background, if that's okay.
Sure.
That's fine. So Steve Ditko, watch that documentary. It's really good. Joined the Army. He was a little too young to actually be in World War II. Joined the Army right afterwards. When he got stationed in Germany. When he gets out, he goes to learn how to draw comics and ends up being one of the most iconic creators of all comics. When Stan Lee goes to Jack Kirby and says, hey, I got an idea for this teenage superhero. He pitches the idea to Kirby. Kirby's like, fuck that. I don't want to do that. So then he goes to Ditko, and Ditko designs Spider-Man. And you have to remember, back in those days, the Marvel method was Stan Lee would come up with an idea. Hey, true believer, why don't we have Spider-Man fight Sandman? And that was pretty much the only direction that he would give the artist. The artist would then plot out everything and do the whole story, artwork and everything. And then Stan Lee would come back in and just do the writing part of it afterwards. So a lot of what we get from the first like 30 or 40 issues that Ditko helped create with Stan Lee on Spider-Man, that's a lot of it is Ditko's creation.
Yeah, and one of the things they mentioned was when he first got back, he was actually going to an art school in North End of Manhattan and was mentored by Jerry Robinson, who we all know was the artist for the very early Batman and is known as the creator of the Joker.
Right. So do you guys want to stop and talk about Spider-Man now, or you want to just keep on going into Ditko's career?
We can just keep on going.
Yes. Just rip through the whole damn career. Okay, let's go.
All right, so in addition to creating Spider-Man, he also creates Doctor Strange. Now, Doctor Strange, that artwork, if you look at those original Strange Tales that Doctor Strange appears in, that is some trippy, balls-tripping stuff. And it's important to note that Ditko is not a drug user. He actually was very conservative. And so in addition to creating Spider-Man and Doctor Strange, he also looks at the Iron Man armor and says, well, that sucks, and redesigns it and comes up with the red and gold armor for Iron Man, that kind of, rather than that just gold tin-plated suit that he had originally. He also is the guy who says the Hulk should be the one, Bruce Banner should turn into the Hulk when he gets mad. So he adds all those things to Marvel Comics. But then he leaves Marvel Comics one day over, we're not exactly sure because Ditko doesn't give interviews. But from what we're able to gather, Ditko gets upset with Stan Lee because Stan Lee wants to have a reveal of who the Green Goblin is. The Goblin, that, or the Green Goblin, as we know, is...
Norman Osborn.
Thank you. Norman Osborn, the father of Peter's friend. And Ditko's like, that's insane. Do you know what the odds would be that this one supervillain would have to be, you know, known to Spider-Man, especially they live in fucking New York? That doesn't make any sense. And Ditko was all about realism, but Stan Lee was more about the story and what would be more dramatic in the storytelling. I don't know. What do you guys think? I think Stan Lee was right as far as a storytelling perspective.
Well, certainly from a story perspective, right? There's, you need that built-in drama there. Otherwise, if you reveal the Green Goblin as just some guy, you basically have a nemesis for no reason, and there's no emotional connection for Spider-Man there. And that sort of leads Spider-Man away from what he is as a hero, and he's a person who believes in redemption. And so Spider-Man very rarely uses his full strength or abilities against people because he really believes that everyone is really doing the right thing. Or it might be just a good person in a bad situation. And he always gives that people the benefit of the doubt. And so very rarely do we see Spider-Man just go like full on with his full strength against people, because that's the essence of Spider-Man itself.
And I agree with you, but I'm going to argue the opposite point. You don't need to know that the Joker is Alfred Pennyworth's second cousin. He's not, by the way. But if you believe me for that moment, it kind of proves my point. Like, you don't need the main arch rival to be somebody known as far as the story goes, but it is more dramatic. So I'm arguing both sides, and I don't even know why I'm doing it. Tom, LT, you guys got opinions?
Also, by making it somebody that's known to Peter, it makes it more conflicted, because it's somebody that he knows and he has respected, and it does bring out the drama, like Josh said. Whereas if it's somebody he doesn't know, then it's easier to hit somebody you don't know than somebody that you do, that you kind of like. You know, it's
you're a monster.
He knows you. You should watch your mouth.
And, Mike, I do agree with you, but this was really Spider-Man's first rival, and I think it sets the tone. So I do see your point where people can be anonymous, and you can still have the belief that they're, you know, Spider-Man doesn't want to, you know, hit them as hard as he physically can to defeat them, and he still wants to be restrained because he's a good guy and he believes that other people are good people. But I think for this... this is really in the first 30 issues, right? This is his first real nemesis, his first real recurring villain. And you kind of wanted that big buildup, and you wanted it to be.
So,
I mean, Stan Lee, what he did is he sold comic books, right?
Yeah.
That's what it does. Yeah. It sells comic books.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's the job of a comic book company.
To sell comics.
To sell comic books.
So Ditko ends up leaving and going to work for Charleston Comics. To say that he influenced Alan Moore's Watchmen is an understatement, because while he's there, he creates the second Blue Beetle, he creates Captain Atom, and he creates The Question, all of who are go on to versions of them appear in The Watchmen. Also, he, in addition to that, he creates his own character, Mr. A, who is... what's the philosophy of Ayn Rand?
Objectivism.
Yeah.
Objectivism, yeah.
Mr. A is just a total epitome of objectivism. Everything is black and white, and there is no in-between for Mr. A. It was a horrible selling comic, and the people who liked it weren't actually his target audience. They were viewing it as a mind trip. Kind of, and hippies got into this comic book, which is the exact opposite of what Ditko wanted. Ditko hated hippies. He was really conservative. In fact, in the one of the writers that they interviewed on that documentary was talking about how he would have Spider-Man swinging through the city and then pass a bunch of hippies who are protesting. And obviously Ditko wanted him, you know, Spider-Man to be like, get a job, hippies. But yeah, Stan Lee was like, way to go. I support you, true believers.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
You can do it.
So he works for Charleston Comics. Then he ends up working for a lot of other comic book companies. He does some stuff for DC, including the very trippy Shade the Changing Man. He does some work on he creates the Creeper for DC Comics. He works on Demon and Man Bad and a bunch of other comic books. He was really good at the Monster Comics. He does some Godzilla for a time, in addition to a whole bunch of other Monster Comics.
Mike, he also created The Question and Hawk and Dove for DC.
Yeah.
Well, The Question is for...
The Question started in Charleston.
It started at Charleston, but it was later became a DC character.
Right. And Hawk and Dove, again, this is a guy who is ultra-conservative, and he makes Hawk this action figure hero who, you know, is right wing and ready to take on everybody, and Dove is just a... Sorry, can't use that word.
Sorry, Diane.
My bad.
A genteel kind.
Let's try one more time on that.
All right.
A stylish gentleman. Actually, he's not stylish. His costume is terrible.
Dove is a feckless...
No.
I saved it, man. Don't laugh at me.
Saved it.
You did not save it.
In addition to that, he also goes back to Marvel later on. I mean, there's no hard feelings between him and Marvel. He just chooses to do whatever work that he wants to do. So he works on some really bizarre stuff. He creates Squirrel Girl. He also creates Speedball. Again, look at the characters that he creates. Doctor Strange, the Creeper, Speedball, the Question. And he's not on drugs. I can't. It's all weird to me.
I love the fact that in, like, the late 80s, early 90s, he creates a character named Speedball, and yet he's not on drugs.
Yeah.
I love that.
So, anyways, that's pretty much the career of Steve Ditko. He's done some really weird stuff. Like, he did coloring books for the Transformers. His artwork just kind of appears here and there everywhere.
So, one of the things
A little bit like Savoir Faire.
Uh-huh.
He is everywhere. And he always gets his mouse. Right?
Wait.
No, that's Klondike Cat always gets his mouse.
Thank you.
And Savoir Faire is everywhere.
Gotcha. Okay. Mixed up Klondike Cat and Savoir Faire. I'm just saying, it's a reasonable mistake to make.
It is.
Thank you. Okay.
I'll give you that.
Unless you're a Canadian cartoon.
Right. So, yeah, one of the things they mentioned that I agree with in the documentary is how Ditko is really sort of the first person to make his hero look not heroic. He's, you know, he's thin. He you know, he's not the muscled Spider-Man we see today. He doesn't draw him as, you know, the square-chinned, bright-eyed, you know, blue-eyed hero of everyone else's comics. And he really turns the backgrounds of comics into the characters themselves. He really turns New York into its own character. You can really feel it in the way he draws the backgrounds, how he turns everything sort of gritty and dark. And it's both a apt setting for Spider-Man's beginning as well as Daredevil's. He does some of the Daredevil work in the beginning. And that really turns New York into what – I mean, as far as when I was a kid, I just assumed all of New York looked that way. It was just tall buildings, dark alleys, and you never knew it was going to be around whatever corner. And maybe it was that way in the 80s, but, you know, it looks nicer now. But that was my childhood perception of Manhattan. Like, that was it.
Yeah.
And he was also one of the first to bring politics into comics, even though he did it kind of poorly.
How so?
Well, I mean, you know, he did it and it was hugely unpopular. He kept trying to bring his Ayn Randian ideas into comics and people didn't like it time and time again. And yet he kept trying to bring it up.
I wouldn't call Ayn Rand politics, but maybe philosophy.
His conservative ideas and such.
Yeah, as an artist, I think he was outstanding. As a writer, I'm not really sure.
Yeah,
he didn't have a lot of commercial success, but he walked away from a lot of money that he was making at Marvel Comics. Just because he didn't agree with the direction. So by all accounts, this is a true artist. I mean, he's doing it for the art. So if he's concerned about trying to express a philosophical point of view in a visual medium like comic books, he's doing it for art's sake. He's not doing it for commercial success. So that kind of stays true to him. I mean, he lived a very, I don't want to say shelter life, but a kind of a hermit life. Like, he didn't want to be involved with anything. You know, he didn't do interviews. Try to find a photo of Steve Ditko. You're going to find one of, like, two or three, maybe, because he just didn't like having his photo taken. When they did the Marvel marching band record that they talk about in the documentary,
yeah,
they'll mention that, you know, Steve Ditko, everybody else appears on the record, all the different characters and the creators of Marvel Comics except Ditko. They make a joke that he jumped out the window rather than having to have his voice heard on this record, because he probably was like, I'm an artist. This is stupid bullshit. I don't want to have anything to do with it.
So in case you don't know what Mike's referring to, back in the day, Marvel had its like an official fan club. You could cut out a page of your comic book and fill it out and send it in and be a fan club member, and you got a newsletter. And one year they put out what were the small albums?
It's a 45.
45?
45, yeah. They put out a 45, and it had one song and a B-side and a couple interviews. So some of the people talking before they played some ridiculous songs. But it only went out to the club members of the Marvel fan club.
That was Foom, correct? Foom. Friends of Old Marvel.
Sure. Yes.
Why not? Whatever else you want to say about Ditko, he led an authentic life. He stayed true to his objective narrative for himself, and he tried to show it in his artwork. Spider-Man was always a do-it-by-his-own-bootstraps kind of character whenever Steve Ditko had his hands in him. So, you know, I disagree, of course, with his philosophy, but, you know, he was unwavering, and he was also kind. It's rare sometimes to meet someone who you're philosophically opposed to who is still kind and generous, and, you know, you can see that he wasn't so caught up in his own philosophy that he wouldn't listen to anyone.
Yeah, one of the interesting things was Alan Moore was talking about Ditko, and one of the things he mentions is that Ditko passed away in relative poverty compared to some of the money he could have collected if he had stayed with Marvel. He didn't take any of the intellectual rights for Doctor Strange or Spider-Man, or so he missed out on a lot of income. And Alan Moore's like, I kind of regret seeing that and not seeing him just retire independently wealthy and going about his business, which I find ironic a little bit because Alan Moore opposes the creation of some of his works into major media and takes his name off those. And I don't know if he collected a paycheck from what ended up on like From Hell. And I don't know if he got his payday, but he certainly did want to keep his name off it. You know,
he took his name off it, but he did collect those paychecks. I'm certain of that. I remember reading that. I'm not just saying I saw it on a sandwich.
Hey, I saw it on a sandwich. Well, good for him. And so that brings me to my trivia question about Alan Moore. This is a good one. In the documentary, Alan Moore says that his band, Alan Moore has a band, writes a song about Steve Ditko. What is the name of Alan Moore's band?
So I'm going to guess Non-Consensual Date. No, wait. Non-Consensual Plot Device. That's it.
Oh.
Tom,
me too. I'll guess that one.
The girl all the bad guys want in the refrigerator. Oh, that's gold. Give me something.
That's a solid gold dancer.
Or was.
With that outfit, she was asking for it?
Oh, too far, man. Too far.
Wow. Yeah.
What is wrong with you, LT?
Jesus. Can you describe the outfit? Anyway, they are called the Emperors of Ice Cream.
They sound delicious.
They do sound delicious. And I want to hear the Ditko song. I'm going to find that. And we're going to play it on this podcast.
Hey, this is Mike, the producer in post-production. No, we are not going to play that on this podcast.
I mean, not right now. Because I got to find it first. I mean, I could find it right now. We'll see. Hang tough, fans. Here I go. Carry on without me.
So, one of the things that I find interesting about Ditko was that he shared a studio with Edward Stanton and did some inking for some risque artwork that he never put his name on.
Who's Edward Stanton? Forgive my ignorance.
He did some artwork for Playboy and some other such magazines.
Huh.
He was a comic artist?
Yeah, I believe it.
I guess this wasn't in the documentary.
No, it was. If it was, I didn't see that part of it. Did you know that he was one of the artists for the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers?
Yes, I did know that.
I thought I was whipping out a fun Alec fact, and I just blew it. Damn it. I'm sorry, Alec. And I know your name is Alex. So who do you guys think is Ditko's greatest creation?
So I'm going to step a little out of the way and say because of in the absence of the influence of Stan Lee, that it's the Question.
I would buy that.
That's a hard one to argue against. Yeah, he is. His handprints are more on the Question, I think, than any other, especially when you delve into his philosophy. I mean, the Question would be Ditko's guy.
Every time Ditko created something, it got immediately messed with by somebody else. And the Question, I think, as Tom said, is more of what Ditko was trying to create than anything else. It got less tinkered with than his other creations. I mean, Hawk and Dove immediately got tinkered with by Denny O'Neill. Spider-Man immediately got tinkered with by Stan Lee.
And
you
John
know,
Romita.
Everything.
Yeah. Romita, yeah.
So, I mean, the Question was one of the – Question and Mr. A were things that weren't really tinkered with as much, at least initially.
After DC purchased the Question, when Denny O'Neill takes over the series, it is essentially Denny O'Neill doing a hard-boiled detective, and you can see Denny O'Neill's fingerprints all over it. It's a great series. Later on, though, they do some Question series that focus in on Objectionism? No. What is it?
Yeah.
Objectivism.
Objectivism. Yeah. They do focus in on some of those series. Those series were really weird, and I didn't like it. I picked them up, and I was like, I don't – this is not the Denny O'Neill question that I was thinking of. But now, looking back on it, I'm like, okay, I understand what they were going for. They were trying to be true to the original character in the creation of Ditko. Still don't like him, but whatever.
Yeah.
Still don't like him, but whatever.
Still don't like him, but his art was great.
Yeah.
So yeah, that would be my that would be my vote cast for that. I mean, certainly Spider-Man is by far the most known, right? You could ask 100 people and maybe 5 of them would know who the question were. I would be in the US, you'd be hard pressed to find 5 people out of 100 who didn't know who Spider-Man was, right?
And now you'd be hard pressed to find 5 people that don't know who Spider-Man or Doctor Strange were. Because of the Marvel movies.
That's true.
Yeah, although I may go with the Creeper, because the Creeper is actually remained true to Ditko's original imagining of the Creeper. Right? He hasn't changed. He's this weird dude who dresses up and laughs and just goes around and beats people up. And in his secret identity, he is this hard-nosed, gritty... I don't want to call him reporter, television personality, who they kind of keep that throughout every appearance of the Creeper.
But has he stayed that way because people are staying true to him, or because there's nowhere to go with that character? You fashioned a character that's basically how do you get away from what the Creeper is? He's not like he's a complex or right. He's got a thing, and it's just easy to stick to. Like, it's like, how do you reimagine the Creeper?
Yeah, I'm coming up blank with a good Creeper story, and I've seen him in a lot of comic books.
Hear me out. I watched the episode of Different Strokes, where Arnold goes to the back of the bicycle shop. And nearly gets raped by the guy who was the president of WKRP in Cincinnati. If they can try to flesh out a story from Different Strokes in that way, I think we can give the Creeper some kind of backstory. I think we could, if we tried hard enough, we could put the Creeper in a situation where he is forced to grow. The way Arnold was forced to grow.
So you want us to have the Creeper get sexually assaulted?
So you want Alan Moore to write a Creeper story?
Oh, you know what? I would actually like that.
Yeah, Alan Moore could write the hell out of a Creeper story.
Yeah, I'd read that.
He really could. Yeah. Like a weird punch. I'm thinking of Neil Gaiman too.
And Neil the title Gaiman would be. The title would be, well, you've seen his outfit. He was just asking for it. No,
too soon, man. No, I'm just kidding. It's fine to make rape jokes about Alan Moore shit.
A Neil Gaiman creeper? I don't know.
Yeah.
You know what Neil Gaiman's problem is? He can't write.
Yeah, I've heard
I love his
about
ideas, it. And I cannot read Neil Gaiman's books.
Neil Gaiman is an awesome writer. It's just that he only has one idea.
No, he only has one character.
Right.
Even his 9-year-olds talk like English professors. It drives me insane.
Yeah, but it's always, I'm a regular person. Oh, wait, I just found out I was actually something else. That's pretty much every Neil Gaiman story except for The Sandman.
Right.
Wow.
Sorry, Neil.
Wow, we're really bashing on some great comic book creators. What the fuck is wrong with us? We love these guys. I love Neil Gaiman shit. I love Alan Moore's stuff. I love Rob Liefeld's personality.
don't do this what you hate, Mikey. Come on.
Get as many stars as his heroes have abdominal muscles.
He's got a big heart. And you know what? I'll tell you what. Friend of the podcast, Tony Isabella, likes Rob Liefeld. So if he likes Rob Liefeld, I like Rob Liefeld, and I will stop shitting on his crappy stories and horrible art.
Look, that Rob Liefeld seems like a nice enough guy.
I've never met him.
Yeah,
like a nice enough guy.
Yeah. So let's stop shitting on Rob Liefeld.
As, by the way, you know,
I mean, he wants you to have extra organs.
Yeah.
You know, in case you need a spare.
So we're a little bit off on a tangent.
Yeah, that's your job, Josh.
And that's usually my job, but I'm going to go to somebody else. We're going to go to Tom. Tom, what do you got?
I want to do tangent this week. Can I do tangent, please?
Yeah, tangent away, my friend.
If you could have now that we know that Ditko passed away in relative poverty, if we can go back in time and seduce Ditko to start going to a couple of shows, who would you have Ditko draw for you in your sketchbook?
Ooh. Ooh, Mysterio.
Oh, that's a good one.
Because it'd be really easy for him to do. It's just a fishbowl.
It's just a fishbowl.
That's the headshot. Wait, I just made $500 for a circle?
You liberals are idiots. Meanwhile, Adams is across the way laughing that he only got $500.
You're underselling yourself.
I think I'd have to go with the Doctor Strange fighting Nightmare, because some of the artwork where Doctor Strange is fighting Nightmare, that's Ditko's, is just unbelievably trippy.
I am going to have to go with the original Beetle from Spider-Man 21. He looks so... Have you guys looked at the original Beetle costume? It is crazy looking. He looks like Angel with purple wings, and he's got big suction cup hands. It is so awesome. I would have to go with the Beetle.
It's a good one. How about you, Tommy?
I would just tell Ditko to draw whatever he likes. Just draw me a space scene and have it artist choice.
You know, space is a vacuum.
Yeah. It'd be Ayn Rand driving an American car.
$500.
But it would be an awesome American car, Josh. Be an awesome American car. That sucker would probably be at like 1932 Cord.
All right, Mike. This has been a dramatically long podcast. What do you got at the front of the long box for us?
At the front of the long box, I have one of the most bizarre history stories that you will read in comics. It is Exit Stage Left, The Snagglepuss Chronicles by Mark Russell. Now, those of you who have been listening to this podcast for a while will know that we loved Mark Russell's take on the Flintstones. And now he's going after the McCarthy hearings. And in order to set the stage, Snagglepuss is one of the most successful playwrights. He also has Huckleberry Hound, who is one of the most successful novelists in the country. Both of them happen to be gay. And some other characters that are introduced include Squiddly Diddly, Peter Potamus, Quick Draw McGraw is actually Huckleberry Hound's lover, and also a police horse. It is a interesting comic, but it's actually very sad in a way, because he's dealing with a very tough topic when we're talking about the McCarthy hearings. And he's talking about people getting persecuted for what they believe in, he goes into the whole thing of what is true patriotism. Is patriotism blindly following what the government wants, or is patriotism being subversive to what the government wants? And he examines that in intricate detail. And I had to go back and I read the series twice. It's only 6 issues. And the first time I read it, I just read it straight through. And it kind of made me sad. The second time I went through it, I pictured all the voices of the actual cartoon characters saying the lines. And it made it surreal for me. Listening to Snagglepuss wax poetically in that Snagglepuss voice, which I can't do, but I can do it in my head, and Huckleberry Hound being so depressed, manically depressed, about his relationship and not being able to find a real love. It's all bizarre when you put in these cartoon character voices. So bizarre that I enjoyed it more the second time around. But again, I'm going to recommend it just so you can check out what Mark Russell's take on the McCarthy era hearings are. It's called Snagglepuss Chronicles, Exit Stage Left. It should be coming out in graphic novel form very soon. So if you want to hold off on trying to find all the six back issues, you just wait. The graphic novel will be out soon by DC Comics.
I have to say, in that context, Quick Draw is not a great nickname. Anybody else get a chance to read that?
Peter Potamus, as the director for the play, is just phenomenal because he's still freaking hilarious.
As soon as it comes out in the trade, I can't wait to read it. LT, what do you got at the back of the long box?
I have...
Be brief.
I have Atlas Era, Tales to Astonish Masterworks. This is put out by Marvel. In it is a great Ditko story. I know the secrets of the poltergeist, and it is a fantastically drawn story. In this is all the old Atlas era stories that are kind of one shot stories that were put together, collected in a trade edition put out by Marvel, and it's just great old time stories that are mostly horror or fantasy, and it's a great little read, nice diversion.
I like diversions. Tom, I know you stole my segment, but do you have anything socially conscious you'd like to add today?
No, I just wanted to steal your segment. And I would really have loved to have seen Ditko out on some of those things. It's too bad that, you know, he was kind of opposed to that kind of crass commercialism of art, because I'm sure a lot of us who are fans and are now mourning his passing would love to have something on the wall.
Absolutely. So this is the Long Box, guys. We are saluting Steve Ditko. But now we're going to go to plugs. Mike, who do you love?
I love you.
Thanks. You should have mentioned your wife first, but I'll take top billing.
Yeah, like my wife listens to this podcast. So I would like to thank Kirby Crackle for providing us our geek rock music every week. You can check them out at kirbycracklemusic.com or buy their music on iTunes or Bandcamp. I'd also like to thank all the people who came out to my panels at the St. Charles Parish Library Comic Con. We had a really good turnout for both Horrible Stereotypes and censorship in comic books, as well as civil rights and social justice. So a lot of good fan turnout and a lot of good conversation with not only the adults who were there, but the kids also had a lot to say about censorship. So that was a really good turnout, and I appreciate it. Also, I'd like to thank our fellow podcasters over at Who's Next Gaming. They are doing some great stuff. This week they were talking about the cloud. So if you get a chance and like gaming and sex robots, go check out Who's Next.
Yeah. Tom, where do you buy your comics?
I buy my comics at Kamikaze here in beautiful downtown Somerville. That place is really nice, and the people are super friendly. And now, because my wife doesn't work at Tufts anymore, they're nice enough to still let me have a bin, but they Uber or FedEx my comic books over to me once every 2 months now. It's nice.
That is nice. That's right. What other plugs you got?
No, I'm good.
Okay. LT, who's your favorite vendor?
My favorite vendor is GeekOrthodox.com.
GeekOrthodox.com.
Hi, Tammy.
GeekOrthodox.com, purveyor of fine T-shirts and other geeky things, such as Johnny Skywalker.
Hey, we gotta wrap this up soon. My wife is wicked drunk, and the getting's good. Guys, I'm just saying.
Well, then
GeekOrthodox.com.
And that's all we have for this evening. Tom, what do you always tell people?
Get off the air so I can go plug my wife.
Mike, what's this podcast like for you?
It's like Tom plugging his wife.
LT, What's it like plugging Tom's wife? I mean, what's... yeah. That's all I got, folks. Thank you for
listening. Don't dish what you hate. Just let Tom plug his wife.
Find us on thelongbox.com. Find us on Patreon. Find us on Twitter, at thelongbox, guys. We love you all. Good evening.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
We're ready.
All right.
Oh, it doesn't feel so good to get stepped on when you're doing your intro, does it?